You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
Hey guys, Lou here again. Real quick, this is another one that had me going boom, boom, boom on the microphone. I believe this should be the last one. I'm so sorry about this, but I'm hoping the next one should be good. Thank you.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a Next Generation podcast, where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is... I've forgotten. Oh, Remember Me. I'm Paul, and I'm from the UK.
And I'm James from London.
In the UK.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. And Paul, also known as Fur Bob, it's actually pronounced Remember Me.
Oh, I must remember.
Remember. Okay, Paul from the UK. How have you been, bud? Because we have not talked for almost a year. Looks like you were on for the Defector, or I sometimes call it the Defecator. But it is the Defector that was recorded back in September, so... How you been in the last 9 months? 8 months?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good, yeah. I knew it was September. I couldn't remember which episode it was. But yes, the Defector, I remember that. I remember that now. But yeah, I mean, I've been pretty busy. Obviously, not only doing the 10 Forward podcast, which I'm one of the co-hosts, but also the Sci-Fi Waffle podcast, which is also on the Trekmate website. So yeah, that's been keeping me occupied for the last almost a year now.
Okay. So 10 Forward, so that way I could take notes and put it in the show notes. So 10 Forward, and of course the Sci-Fi. How's the Sci-Fi going?
That's going very well. We've just finished our first year, so we actually do it every 2 weeks. So we've done 26 episodes, and that's just on 12 months. So yeah, we're still going strong. We're coming up with... interesting topics, and we're still getting good ideas and a bit of science fiction news and a bit of science news thrown in as well, and anything to do with superheroes, etc., etc. So yeah, it's going really well.
Okay. Yeah, and since we talked to Colin last, we'll be talking to him in a few episodes, but it looks like he's restarting Trek News and Views.
Yeah, that's good news, so to speak. If you pardon the pun, but yes, you can't have enough Colin on podcasts these days.
Absolutely. So, you know, wish him the luck, and of course, we'll have a link to there in our show notes.
Uh-huh. And I believe you're having my my co-host in the next show, Mr. Sean Vanderloo.
Oh, from the Rusted Robot.
That's correct. And the Sci-Fi Waffle.
Yes, and the Sci-Fi Waffle. Isn't the Rust? I think the Rusted Robot is on hiatus right now, isn't it?
No, it's not.
No, it's not.
No, it's still going.
Oh, good. Okay.
It came back. It was on hiatus for a little while, but it came back in kind of like a bit of a next generation format. So I actually just listened to the last show they put out was some type of Comic Con thing in Canada. I'm sure. There's obviously a technical name to whatever they had.
North Ontario Expo.
North Ontario Expo, excellent. They've been teasing it for the last like 6 months or so at least. And I saw that Sean got dressed up as a Borg. And he didn't reply to my tweet when I commented that I was a very good looking Cyberman. And he didn't take the bait, so I was a little disappointed.
Okay.
No, his Borg costume was incredible. I'll see if I can get a picture of it up while we're talking.
Yeah, and send it to me. Maybe I can toss that in there as well. But well, it's good that Rusty is back up. Rusty Robot. So, okay. And you want to come on for Remember Me.
That's right.
How come? What do you like about it? I mean,
oh my goodness, this is one of my top five shows. It was in when we did the 10 Forward Desert Island Trek. This was in my top five of all time favorite shows. It's just a really good story. It's a very good science fiction story. Plays around with multiple or parallel universes. It's finally something that Beverly Crusher gets to do really well. Mm-hmm. It's probably the best Beverly episode that there is. And as people have probably heard on other podcasts, I'm not a big fan of Beverly Crusher as such, but this one, no, it's fine. She does really well in this one, and I like it. I really, really like it. I can watch it over and over again, as I generally do.
Mm, okay. All right, then. Well, it's good to have you on again there, bud. And whenever you are ready, I have put in our group chat the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey used to say.
Okay. The synopsis for tonight's show is, following an anomaly in a warp bubble experiment, Dr. Crusher finds that crew members are beginning to disappear, while she is the only one who seems to notice. This is the fifth episode of Season 4 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is October the 22nd, 1990, and written by Lee Sheldon, and directed by the Bolian Cliff Bowl. Guest stars include Eric Menyuk as the Creepy Traveller, Bill Irwin as Luz Mancrush, or Dr. Dalen Quayce, Colm Meaney as Miles O'Brien,
I didn't have anything for him.
My favourite Irishman, because I have a picture of him over my left shoulder. If you had cameras on, you'd be able to see. I met the man at Destination Star Trek London. So yeah,
Really
good man.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to him.
So what do we think about this episode then, guys?
You start.
He's talking to you, Paul.
Yeah, go ahead,
okay.
Paul.
Okay. It's hard to know when nobody points because there's no cameras on.
He was pointing. He was pointing.
Guest always goes first here.
Oh, that's very British of you. Thank you very much. This is an absolutely fabulous episode. I love the idea of separate parallel universes. I like this idea because it shows off Star Trek as to what it should really be. And when Beverly initially disappears, and you think she's disappeared, but then she turns back up again, and you don't really know who's gone. Is she gone? No, she's there. But then the universe that she is in is created by her own mind, her own thoughts, and everybody that she interacts with believes her story. And that is typical Star Trek, is that you are believed first, then they will do some experiments to find out what's going on before they then either dismiss it or go with it. And this is what I like about The Next Generation, is it doesn't matter who it is that comes to the captain with a problem, they are instantly believed and they move on to sorting out what the problem is. And this runs right the way through this episode.
Okay. All right, then. I wish I could be instantly believed, but sometimes it doesn't always work out that way. But yes, I do like this one as well. It is a mystery, and you're not exactly sure what's happening, whether it is in Beverly's mind or whether it's actual people being disappeared from existence. And so it's a fascinating plot as to why nobody else remembers or how somebody can disappear. As soon as you turn your eyes and look the other way and come back, they're gone. And the computer doesn't know who they are. Their own families don't know. So this is a very fascinating mystery. So, I like it. What about you, James?
Right, Lou. So I got a weird email from you earlier in the week, throwing down the gauntlet and claiming that you're going to like this episode more than I do. Is that right?
I thought so. I don't know. I didn't think you'd be into this kind of a story. Am I wrong?
You might be wrong.
Okay.
I think that a lot of so I'm actually in a bit of two minds here because first of all, I think I'm gonna call up Paul and say there are no parallel universes in this episode. I mean, really, I thought I just always interpreted it as, you know, it being Crazy Beverly in a warp bubble, whatever that might mean. But certainly bring up the issue later on about why she's instantly believed, because I have something to say on that. And I think, you know, when I noticed it, I thought that the episode was a lot nicer and a lot tighter than you might think on first watch. But I absolutely love this episode. I think it's wonderful. And I really enjoy it. I think there's a bit where just about sags for a little bit in the middle where it seems like they've run out of ideas. So they need her to go around and to have another breakdown after someone else has disappeared. But overall, it's actually very good. I think they managed to keep the question marks there. Although when you rewatch, you can clearly see that everything is being done correctly in chronological order. So you can see that people do, you know, you can identify the moment where Beverly disappears. And the fact that you then cut to her in her little universe is neither here nor there. But, you know, I really, really like that. I do have big problems, though, with warp bubbles. And I do have big problems with the Traveler coming back. I love where no one has gone before. And I just don't think this... I think you've moved... the Traveler himself has changed. I don't think it's the same kind of really guy that you had before. And I don't quite like... as they push him more into the spiritual realm. But, you know, it is what it is. I really enjoyed the episode, though.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I like the fact that it pretty much answers our questions as we're given them. You know, when Data reads off how many people there are on board, well, why? Why would there be so much room? And, you know, he comes with very good explanations as to why there'd be such a small crew on a ship that should have over 1,000 and could even hold more. So I like when they answer our questions for us. As far as alternate universe, I'm not exactly sure alternate universe is a correct way of describing it, but I mean, it's not really in her head, I suppose. That would imply that there's some force that's actually doing this to her. So to me, it seems like she's in some kind of a bubble, I guess. And the bubble is getting smaller. And as it gets smaller, people disappear. But that's why I say it's a fascinating story.
So where is this bubble then?
It's a good question. In subspace somewhere, I suppose. But so is she actually, while she's in this bubble, was she physically on the ship? Or did she wind up somewhere?
Now, from the descriptions that I got from the Traveler and also from Wesley's description of what his experiment was, a warp bubble. So they're basically warping space into a, you know, so there's a bubble. It's just like the way the warp drive works, okay? So you bend space around the ship. The ship then really isn't actually in the same space because it is warping the space around it. Now, that's what I assumed the warp bubble was. It was a bubble that was sat with all of the universe being warped around it. So it sits outside of the current universe. So therefore, it is either a parallel universe or a universe in a universe. Mm-hmm. Now, inside that universe, Beverly has been put inside this thing, and what she creates inside that bubble comes out of her mind. So she creates her own reality. So it just so happens that she was thinking about losing people and how other people had lost people. And so as soon as she was put into this bubble, the reality around her was created that she is going to lose people, and that's basically what happens. So that's the way I interpreted it. It was a universe inside our universe with Beverly Crusher's reality inside that. That's how I assumed it. That's why I said parallel universe or even a universe in the universe, if you want to put it that way. Mm.
So when he says her thoughts at the precise moment that the bubble was formed created its reality. So I'm curious, lighten this a little bit, but if she was thinking of gigolo dancers at the time,
Then that's what you'd get, yeah.
Would those gigolos have been disappearing, or would they have been adding?
Yeah, this was one of the problems that I had with the episode, is that why do people actually disappear? And does she have control over it through her mind? And, you know, why are people disappearing? Why aren't they just turning into giraffes? Because you had a flight of fancy at that point.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, okay. So, my thought was that although, because obviously it's starting to shrink, and you would think, well, okay, if it's shrinking, you'd lose the people on the outside first. I don't think it quite works like that. I think it's as the place shrinks, it can only hold a certain amount of atoms. Otherwise, it gets very compact. So I think this is just my theory. It doesn't work in real physics. As it starts to shrink, the amount of people you can have has to disappear in order to be the same size. I don't know where those atoms go. I'm just making this up as I go along. But that was my sort of rationalization of it.
Actually, it's strange because I chose not to rationalize this in any way, shape, or form. I just had... Because I think the episode is, there's a bit of a mystery, there's a bit of a strange thing happening, and in the end, they basically say that, hey, a tech bubble kept her in there and something happened. And I'm not confident enough to be able to say, to map this over to like a warp bubble or to a parallel universe kind of theory. And I don't like necessarily the Traveler coming back and becoming, you know... I thought that a lot of the stuff that he was saying in When No One Has Gone Before was, I was very happy to go with it and to go with how he was putting together, you know, the metaphors as to how to explain stuff to like a child. But in this episode, he comes across slightly too much like a motivational speaker to Wesley, who I don't think is on the same page, shouldn't be on the same page as him. So in my mind, I think all of the science is just nonsense and doesn't make sense, and I can't make it work into a proper story. But I actually don't care. I actually think that in a very similar way to the episode Frame of Mind, where Riker starts going crazy. I can't even remember what the cause of that was, but eventually I was happy to have this as almost like a, you know, a kind of a strange drug-induced a flight of fancy, and almost leave it at that, because I think the storytelling is very good. I can't square the science in my mind, but it doesn't really matter.
Hmm. Interesting. So those atoms of those people that are disappearing, obviously they were not real. Even though her tricorder says O'Brien is perfectly fitting, but he's not real. Maybe the tricorder's not even real.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, if the people aren't real, then all the, you know, the ship isn't real, the equipment isn't real. Probably the only thing that is real is her.
Or is it?
Or it might just be her. Yeah, it might just be her thoughts.
Yeah,
it's hard to say.
So, okay, one of the reasons why I'm coming onto this kind of earlier than expected. But you mentioned that everyone believed Crusher when she was in her little bubble. And one of the reasons why I kind of more lean to the idea that it's something happening within Crusher's consciousness that happens to be in a bubble somewhere is that I don't think anyone tells Crusher anything that she doesn't know. And I think everyone behaves towards Crusher in the way that Crusher wants them to behave towards her. And I actually, as a result, I noticed that almost the entirety, I think the entirety of the stuff in the bubble is Crusher working it out in her own mind. So there's a bit where you notice that Picard is very eager to please Crusher. You notice that when people talk to Crusher, they are not... I think the tech is always very generic. They don't get onto specifics. She doesn't really engage with things outside of the ship. She doesn't engage with... You know, she doesn't go to the database and find new knowledge. And there are too many of these telltale signs in my mind that suggests that, frankly, I think all of this is just in her head, or at least it's all within the control of the knowledge that she has in her head, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I go along with that, James, totally. It's the people treat her because the way they do is because that's in her mind is how she is treated by those people. So yes, it makes total sense the way things are going, and like you say, you tend to give the science a bit of a pass, and just go with the show. And it's good to see her working out for herself what is wrong and what is happening, and coming to the conclusion at the end by using her own training as a doctor to come to a logical conclusion and diagnosis of what the problem is. And she does that all by herself, which is why it's a really good episode. It's, you know, it's, she's taken the lead. She's given a good script. She's given, you know, great actors to play off, but she is the main character, and she totally drives the show. So it really works.
Does this count as a Wesley Save the Ship episode? And if it does it matter?
I think the traveler actually did himself a disservice at the end there, because when Beverly comes out and says, you know, comes out of the bubble and she says, "Oh, you, do I have you to thank for what's you know, for saving me?" And he says, "No," and sort of points to Wesley and says, you know, it's all him. And I don't think it was Wesley. I mean, it was really, I think it was the traveler sort of helping him. You know, without the traveler, he wasn't going to get it. So, the traveler helped him. So I think it's all him.
No, I thought what I was thinking is it looked like the traveler opened up the same vortex that Wesley and Data had opened up twice earlier. She just chose this time to go ahead and go through it. So had she gone through it the first time, it would have been all over. We would no need for the traveler. That's what I got the impression of.
Yes, he did say she would have to go through she would have to make her own mind to go through it. But at the same time, when the first time the traveler showed up, and you know they had the trying to make the warp drive more efficient and go and get the ship to go faster. Again, it was the traveler that was doing all of the work and not the actual. I can't remember the guy's name now.
Kaczynski,
that's the guy. Yeah. It wasn't him and his mathematics. It was, as the traveler said, you have to go beyond mathematics in order to do it.
Such a thing.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, there's definitely beyond mathematics. I mean, that's obvious.
Okay. All right, so Dr. Dalen Quaise, played by one of my favorite actors, Bill Irwin. And I've talked about Bill Irwin before, but he's sadly gone because I would have loved to have found an excuse to get him on the Lou Trek show. Anytime I could have talked to him, that would have been great. But one of the movies I'm probably going to be putting on a DVD for James is called Somewhere in Time. It's a sappy little love story from 1980. So about Christopher Reeve's character who goes back in time to 1912 to meet up with this beautiful woman played by Jane Seymour. It's a nice movie, and she was stunningly beautifully young in this movie. So this will be interesting for you to see. Wesley is experimenting with the warp engines. Why? Do you think it makes sense for Geordi to even let Wesley, not only in engineering, but to be tapping buttons on a computer in engineering to play with the warp drive?
It's what's needed, right, in order to set up this thing of the week. I have to say, I would have not been as patient as Geordi was when, you know, as this school kid's running an experiment that's taken his entire warp core offline. You don't get the impression that the other engineers even have this kind of, you know, authority or this this amount of a privilege that Wesley seems to enjoy.
Right, but you know, I guess I didn't understand why they needed to take the warp engines offline. Couldn't they do this all by computer or on the holodeck?
There's only so much theoretical stuff you can do before you actually need to get the physical side of things done.
Okay. But of course, Mom comes to visit Wesley in engineering, and then we get this flash, and nobody notices us. Nobody notices, not even us, that Beverly is gone as the camera sweeps by. Because you see Geordi walking to where Wesley is, and she's just gone. So you just assume she ducked out the back door. Now, what I would have liked to have seen is from that moment on, we wake up, or we find ourselves in her universe. It doesn't show how she would have got there. It doesn't show her like coming out of engineering. So I think we kind of missed something of shouldn't she have woke up? What was the transition for her in her eyes, from the flash in engineering to the moment she started her routine. I would have liked to have seen that.
You're right. There is a missing scene there, isn't there, that maybe she should have. But, I say a missing scene. If she walked away, if you'd seen her walk away and then go off and that was her then in her own universe, then it might have been a little bit more confusing. But certainly you needed to see her a bit closer to the event, I think, and not, you know, a couple of hours later, you know, looking for her guest. Or even if she'd said, right, I'll see you later, Wesley, and sort of walked off, even if he hadn't realised that she'd gone, because she's obviously vanished. So, yeah, there is a missing little bit of explanation there.
Right. Now, does anyone notice that this is what is actually happening on first watch? Or do you just, you know, go, oh, well, Crusher's gone.
She left.
And then you pick up Crusher, you know, in the next scene, and you think that that's part of, you know, quote-unquote reality rather than Crusher.
The first time I watched it, I did. And even the second time I watched it, it was a while after I'd seen it, I remembered roughly what was happening. It does throw you. And when I first showed it to my family, when they saw it, they all said, oh, she's been, you know, she's disappeared. And I waited a second, and the scene changes. I said, "Oh no, there she is. She's okay. She's back." And it threw them, and they didn't know, because they thought, "Oh, we were expecting her to have vanished, and everybody's running around going, where is she? Where is she? We have to save her." And because she next thing you see her, she's walking down the corridor. You think, "Oh no, she didn't vanish. So what's going on?" And you think, "Well, where's the mystery? What happened?" And that's what I liked about it the first time I saw it, because it threw that little bit of a curveball at you, and you think you knew where it was going, and then, oh, suddenly it didn't. Obviously, when you see it a number of times and you know what's happening, then that mystery's gone, but it still plays very well.
Mm-hmm. I think it plays very, very well, and maybe I'm just an idiot that gets tricked by this, but I never saw this coming. I really didn't. And I don't think I saw it coming the first time or the first couple of times, you know, when you revisit the show and you don't quite remember everything. I was very pleased that when I rewatched it earlier today, I was saying, okay, look, there has to be a cut, and how do they set it up? And it's clear that they are doing it intentionally, but I think it's very tight. And also they have the scene with with Dr. Quaise and Crusher leading up to this, where they're talking about loss. And that of course sets things up as well for people being lost in the, you know, in the Crusher sub-universe. So I think it's all very nice and very, very tight.
Mm-hmm. Whereas you're right, I love that too, because had she done something like screamed as she was pulled into this bubble, then we know that there was something wrong. But whereas we're played very good at the beginning of this, you know, she's just going on about her day, and then she goes to visit her friend who's just all of a sudden disappeared. But I thought what was interesting was after the bubble happened, after the flash, which I just assumed was, you know, from the warp core, from the little lights that we normally see, just the illuminated much more, something happened. But you know, when Wesley gives up his experiment and, you know, we now have impulse power to the helm, you know, as Wesley's walking out of engineering, he turns and looks back. And I thought that was pretty telling, too, because what's he looking at? You know, where's Mom? Or is it the fact that he almost screwed the engines up? You know, we don't know in the real universe at what point they discovered Dr. Crusher missing. We only know when we go back to them she is missing, and they're still trying to get her back. If I remember correctly, the first time we even have a hint of the real universe was after the first vortex, right?
Yes.
And me being not particularly noticing these issues, even then I didn't get it.
Actually, no, I think it's a second time. The first time the vortex appeared, and then they tried scanning for the vortex, but they couldn't figure out why, what it was, or if it was ever there. And I think, it was a second time, because then you can hear the voices in the vortex saying, "I'm losing it, Commander!" And then, oh, damn it, I'm sorry, Wes. That's when we get the impression that's when we realize that the Prime Universe, as you would call it, is there, and that Beverly is in her own little universe.
that's when it's made explicitly clear.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know, slow people like me noticed that that's what's going on. I think some people can be ahead of the curve here. Cleverer people.
Well, you know, whoever responds to this in the forum, I would love to know this. When, you know, because I was played just like a fiddle all the way along. I thought there's something wrong. People are falling off this universe for some reason.
What I want to know is what when they bridge the gap between the two universes or whatever it is, or, you know, they make this tunnel into the bubble, why is it sucking out all of the air? Why does it suck the air out of the bubble and into their universe?
That's true.
Wouldn't it be the same sort of pressure, and it would, they would just open the door and there it is?
Well,
that's only. I mean, this is only a Crusher's perception of the reality that she's making.
That could.
So it's not necessarily a physical thing per se.
Yeah, but they're still opening some kind of vortex into her reality. It seems like they're making it happen to hopefully suck her in, along with all her books and her equipment. I mean, did they get hit in the face with all that stuff that went through the vortex?
There's a lot of stuff coming out except for the woman that you're trying to save.
Right. Or why couldn't they go into the vortex and get her? Hey, follow me.
Because it was her reality.
Ah. But they can't. So they can't go into her reality, but they can open a bubble to her reality.
That's right, because the traveler says he can no more go into her reality than he could go into her mind.
There you go. See, like I said earlier, this episode answers all the questions that you would ask. Okay. So Beverly shows up to Dr. Quace. That's Q-U-A-I-C-E, by the way. But he's missing. Could he have left the ship, fallen somewhere, and broken a hip? Who knows? Any thoughts on the teaser so far?
Actually, so the teaser's pretty long, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the teaser goes all the way up until, up until Beverly's in the room, and I think when we come back, Worf enters, and Worf does this wonderful thing where, you know, Beverly's telling him, look, he's disappeared, and then all that Worf does is he uses the computer to, yeah, computer, where's the location of Dr. Quace?
Yeah.
Or the Enterprise. Well, that's my job done today.
That's right. You can see Beverly Crusher saying, Worf, I've done that. You know, come on, credit me with some intelligence. Mm.
I do like the teaser, and I think very quickly, it's something I was surprised by, and I was keeping track. This episode, the mystery kind of comes on very quick. So I think by the the first vortex comes in, I've got the first vortex at I think it's 18 minutes, and then you're down to just some Crusher and Picard by halfway through the episode. And I think that you start seeing people disappear very quickly, and I quite like the pace of the mystery. I think it's very good.
You know, I thought that too. I wondered, it seemed like we were halfway there by the time him and her were alone on the ship, and you still got half the story to go. So, and I think a lot of what Beverly did by herself was phenomenal. I don't know what, I sometimes go back and forth on Gates' acting, but I absolutely loved what she did in this one. I mean,
sorry, Paul, I'm going to stop in a second. But I do agree, and I also was worried when I was watching it. I was thinking, hang on, we're now, you know, we've got 20 minutes through, and you're down to like, you know, two guys or however many it is. You know, pretty much she's going to be on her own for, you know, for the last 20 minutes of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was worried that would be like a drawn out process, but it's not. It's, you know, if anything, I think it slightly sags as the, you know, just before the second vortex comes along, and there's talk about, you know, Worf, the big guy, you know, the one that doesn't smile. And you think, well, we've had this before. We've already said that Dr. Salaz disappeared. We've said that the Quasar disappeared. Now we're having the same discussion about Worf disappearing. I didn't think they needed that padding. By the time they take this like left turn with Crusher by herself solving the problem and the stuff going on in the real Enterprise, I think it really shifts up a gear, and it gets very, very good and very tight at the end of the show.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so the Cracker Jack security chief, Worf, is on the case, and In the writer room, you could see a perplexed Picard start spinning out possible ideas. You know, could he have left in an emergency? Did he have any enemies? And I'm thinking, enemies? Clearly, he's never met the old doctor, because I can't imagine who he could piss off to erase all record of him, because there's no record of Dr. Dalen Quayce, no one that ever served. There's no birth records. There's no, you know, there's 100. Data even tries 173 phonetic variations of the name. And I thought, I wonder how many I could come up with. Do you think someone on the production staff, the writing staff, actually wrote out 173 ways of writing the name? Or do you think that's just something they came up with?
They could have quite easily have said 47, and we would have just believed them.
Arr. I get it. Yeah. But, you know, poor Dr. Quayce. He just disappears. And then...
Actually, well, one thing to note is that Dr. Quayce is only in the teaser. Mm-hmm. So the actor doesn't play any more part in the show even before his name comes up as a guest star. So by the time you see the name, he's no longer in it.
Right.
That's a good point.
That's a good point. Well, oh, poor old Bill. I mean, yeah, he was having, I guess he's, it looked to me like they were clearly feeding him cue cards. And, you know, what are you going to do when you're that old? But anyway, so making matters much worse, Chief O'Brien doesn't remember the guy. He remembers Crusher walking into the transporter room and looking around, and then she thanked him, and, my pleasure, doctor, or something like that, but nobody was ever there. Now, at this point, because that's all there was, just the one disappearance, and the fact that O'Brien either is hallucinating or he's outright lying. I actually thought he was outright lying.
Well, this was the point where I started to think, hang on, there is something not right here, because O'Brien wouldn't act like that. He wouldn't. Mm-hmm. He genuinely seems perplexed as to what has happened. And he's not the sort of person that would make something up or be mistaken. He's a pretty, you know, he's a pretty strong guy. So I instantly then that is the point where I started to think, hang on, what is going on? Because this guy's disappeared, but then O'Brien doesn't remember him. This isn't right. You know, there's something going on here. A computer might be able to, might misplace him, or if he's not on the ship, they can't locate him with a computer. You know, that's fine. But then to say, you know, there's no evidence on the transporters that he's been on the transporter. But then O'Brien, a human being, doesn't remember him. That's a significant step, and that's the big step forward. We go, hang on, now there is a mystery. Now there is something going on.
The thing is, I think at this point, this is the point where there's the maximum number of like options available to the writers, because very quickly, then by the time the next guy disappears, we know that, you know, we know that it's either one or the other. We know that it's either, you know, Crusher going crazy, or we know that these people are disappearing. But I think at this stage, we're still in the world where there are fewer enough people that have disappeared, and then also people that we don't know of. So they haven't appeared in another episode. It's not that 900 people have disappeared from the Enterprise. That goes against everything we've ever seen. So I quite like this part where really everything is really up for grabs. You have no idea which direction they're going to be pushing it in. Mm. And I'm pretty sure that O'Brien's recollection actually does fit into the first scene that we see, if you assume that that Dr. Crusher's interactions with Quayce are not real. Mm. Because I think, you know, he mentions that she came in and she says thank you, and he says you're welcome, and there's no interaction between Quayce and O'Brien, and I actually think it all works. If you assume that Beverly's a nut job and imagined the whole thing, then O'Brien could legitimately be telling the truth as we saw it, but we just happened to have a Beverly hallucination in there as well at the same time.
Right.
I do feel sorry for O'Brien, because obviously he's he believes what he believes. You know, there's no reason why, you know, he should believe anything else. I mean, he's obviously a figment of Beverly's imagination at this point, but we don't know that. And you know, you really feel sorry for him. But not only that, is that immediately afterwards, Crusher says, right, I'll do an examination. He's in the room. She walks in. He says, look, I'm perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with my eyesight, and I'm really good. And she says, don't worry, I'm going to do a full diagnostic. What does she think he is, an android?
Mm.
You don't do a diagnostic on a human being.
Yeah, I think it's a huge abuse of power that Crusher has at this stage.
Mm.
It's like, O'Brien, don't believe me, eh? Well, maybe a rectal exam would change that. I mean, it's inappropriate for Crusher to behave this way.
Mm. But yeah. but she's the only doctor on board, so nobody else is going to do it.
Yes.
No. No, there were four. Yeah, no, there were some people. She still had a staff. There were. Let me see here. I had it written down here. Doctors Hill and Dr. Salar, who we remember, Dr. Salar, the little Vulcan, and four other members of the medical staff have vanished. No record of them to be found. Even their families don't remember them. So I think there's still some medical staff that were on that were still present. But some were missing and nobody knows them. Now, I've said it many times, I don't like to just take memory alpha and then talk about it as if it's a revelation or something. But there is a line in here that I would like to discuss. It says, in a deleted scene, Dr. Crusher talks to Dr. Richard Hill's wife, Kara, who doesn't remember her husband. And I thought, I'm glad they left that out because I probably would have been nitpicking the hell out of that. Assuming that Dr. Hill that never existed, that she never married him, she would be still going by her maiden name, unless they never use married names in the future. So who would she be trying to get a hold of? Kara Hill. It said she never knew him, because nobody ever knows him. She may or may not have known that at one time she was Kara Smith. So I'm glad they left that out, because it would have been a real hole there in the plot.
That's right, and depending on what she actually does for a living, you could then quite easily say, well, if you don't have a husband on the ship, why are you here? If she didn't have a job and she was just on the ship because she was his wife and she was part of the, you know, the guests on board the ship rather than the crew, then why would she be there?
Mm. Why is anybody in the DS9 mirror universes where they are? Even at one time, Dax, Ezra Dax, appears in a mirror episode, and that boggles the hell out of my mind. But anyway, that's a different story. We'll get there when we go to Lower Pylon 2. Okay, so this, and this is where the story starts getting interesting, because people are vanishing, no one remembers them. And, you know, at what point should Beverly have begun to believe it had something to do with her? Because she's still thinking, people are disappearing on this ship, and nobody remembers why.
Well, I think this is kind of the good writing, or at least this is thing that's pointed me towards this idea that it is Beverly's mind, and it's her perception of everyone else. Because what is happening is that if you're trying to be cold and dispassionate at this point, or even maybe even before this point, you should be going over to Crusher and saying, "Look, clearly, you know, you're the guy that fell into the hole, and can't you see it?" But the good thing about it is that within this reality, Crush is just getting all the positive reinforcement, right? She has people coming up to her that are trying to figure out the problem, that are trying to, that are reinforcing the fact that what she's doing is correct, and the way that she's proceeding is kind of the way that she should be proceeding.
Right.
And I actually think it, you know, in isolation, you might question why are people behaving this way, you know, given the rational facts in front of them. But because Crush is getting this positive reinforcement from her own mind, frankly, it, you know, to me it makes a lot of sense that she doesn't quite get it until right at the end.
Right. All right, but yeah, eventually she becomes the sole medical officer on a ship with over 1,000 people, but no, there are only 230 people. So maybe she should go talk to Troy. 230 people over 1,000. I mean, this, they had to have all disappeared very quickly. And it makes me wonder, obviously nobody disappeared at all. It's just her perception of what's happening here. So I was thinking, did they all disappear at once? Do they go 50 at a time? You know, what, like displaced on Voyager? You know, do they do one every 17 minutes or something? But no, it, since it's all just her perception, it doesn't matter when people disappeared.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they could have been going one every minute and she wouldn't have noticed. Mm-hmm. It's only when she's told that she realizes just how many have gone.
Yes. But when she gets back to sickbay, that's when we get that first vortex. And like I said, papers, books, and other things fly into the vortex, so it would have been known if Wesley got slapped by a book on the other side. But she goes to report this vortex, and now there's only 114 people aboard the ship. And so, again, Data says, she asks, why is this ship deserted? Why such a big ship? And, you know, colonist transportations, emergencies. Did you guys buy what Data was saying? Because I did. I thought, well, that makes perfect sense. Yeah, we have a big-ass ship because sometimes there's a lot of people that needs to be evacuated from a planet or another ship, and that's what they could be doing. Do you guys buy it?
Not when you know the size of the ship. Mm-hmm. This is an exercise I did at work recently. That we work in a very large warehouse, and I mean very large. We're talking 220 meters long by 80 meters wide, mm-hmm. and it's a big building. And I was sat around one day thinking, as you do, I wonder if you could fit the Enterprise in here. And I was thinking the original Enterprise. And so I looked up the measurements, and I very quickly calculated that no, it would actually stick out the top quite by a long way. And then I thought, well, just how big is the next generation Enterprise, the D? And of course, that's something like 1,000 meters wide. I mean, we're talking about a kilometer wide. It is immense. The size of that is incredible. And when you put it to scale to our building, it was just going to absolutely dwarf the building.
Wow.
So to have, you know, 1,000 people on it, they would be rattling around even in the saucer section. You know, there's quite a few rooms there that would be empty at best. To then only have 200 and something people in there, or even 140 odd people in there, and then say, oh no, the rest of this ship is purely for helping out and, you know, taking colonists off, is a little bit unbelievable. I understand that, you know, the logic that was being applied by Data was, of course, Crusher's own projection of it. But it made sense in some respects, but you wouldn't have such plush rooms for taking people off a planet that is about to explode or something, or maybe there's a natural disaster that these people need to be taken from. You don't put them up in a 5-star hotel.
That's a very good point. I never thought of that. You're absolutely right, because here's another thing to consider. Her next question should have been, well, if we do have an emergency evacuation, I'm the only doctor to care for everyone that comes on the ship?
That's an excellent point. Well done, that man.
So, yeah, that makes no sense, too. So, I mean, I bought the fact that they sometimes need to get people off a ship or a planet before something happens. In that case, they wouldn't need all the doctors. But if they're all injured, you need a lot more than one doctor.
But I think we have multiple cases, right, where Crusher is able to logically argue that it doesn't make sense. But the people within the universe kind of, you know, just shrug it off, and they are comfortable with that. So in particular, when it's, when it's just Picard and Beverly, it's like, so this is our ship? Just as?
Yeah.
Never need anyone else? And think, well, you know, I can see there are 5 chairs on the Enterprise at very least. So why have you only got 2 people? And I think there's a point where she's trying to, logic the computer. And she says, you know, what's the purpose of the ship? And it's like, I could seek out, new lives or whatever, however they phrased it this week. Anyway, am I qualified to do that on my own? Went, nope. Mm-mm. Okay. So, you know, clearly you've reached a contradiction there. And I like that they reached these contradictions, and they didn't, they were happy to go there and to show you that, no, this universe doesn't make sense. Because otherwise what would happen is that eventually, nerdy nitpickers will come along and go, ah, you see, how could it possibly be that Crusher is the only one on board? But the fact that they acknowledge it within the episode, I think it makes the story better. It protects you against, all of these angry nerds.
I'm just surprised the computer didn't come up with the cutesy little answer about why she'd be the only one there. I mean, that's the only time that her reality was stumped. She's got some pretty damn good answers. Like I said, there is a plausible reason for why you would have an evacuation ship floating in space somewhere, but when she asks the question, then why am I the only member? I'm surprised that they didn't come up with some kind of cutesy answer.
I like the, if this were a bad dream, would you tell me? And the computer says, that is not a valid question.
Like, hell, like, hell, it's not. That's a very valid question.
It is a perfectly valid question. In fact, it doesn't have to be valid. It's still a question that needs an answer.
And that's why I say, in her alternate universe, in her mind, it should have said, yes. You know, if this were a dream, would you tell me? Of course we would.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, why would a question have to be valid from a computer's point of view? Right. It's got nothing to do with it.
Right. Plus, another thing, you know, let's back up a little bit, where the computer begins monitoring Picard's life signs, and you hear body pressure, blood pressure, heart rate, everything, including, you know, how aroused he is at that moment. Okay, they left that part out. But as soon as she turns her head, whammo, he's gone. And same thing with Wesley. You know, we got to find out what's going on from the camera turn. She's in front of him, and though she looks back, he's gone and runs back in. Wesley!
Yeah, they're disappearing like leprechauns. You have to keep looking at them. As soon as you look away, they're gone.
They're gone. And
But I think it's done well, right? And I think it's very, yes, very, 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 very tight. And I think, I mean, it's Cliff Bold this week directing, yeah, and I think it's very, very competently done. I mean, yes, of course, it's just a glance away, and then he disappears.
Right.
But in my mind, it was like the scene made you relax. It made you relax that Picard and Crusher were talking and everything was safe. And then Crusher just turns away for a split second. And the first thing I noticed was that the computer stopped talking.
Right.
And it wasn't that, oh, Crusher, you've turned away, you fool, you're going to lose him. I also became relaxed enough to accept that Crusher would turn away. And as soon as it happens, bang. And I think it's a very good sign of the... In a different director's hand, it wouldn't be so tight. It wouldn't be so, so well executed.
Plus, they didn't have to use a cheesy light effect to make it... to let us know he just vanished without actually seeing him vanish. I definitely would have cheapened it had we seen a quick flash of light.
Yep.
Okay. So then, all of a sudden, we have another vortex, and this time she's hanging on for dear life. That was kind of interesting. With the, everything, including the con and ops position consoles, just swinging out, and here she is, just about holding on for dear life. Not bad sound. Not bad effects there, holding her up in the air, right?
Yeah, it's pretty good, and I believe that she did her own stunts at this point as well, so fair play to her.
Right. Okay. So, but this time we hear the voices on the other side. You know, I'm losing it. I was wondering if she heard that. I mean, we hear it, but I would have liked to have known if she had said, who the hell was that?
Yeah, she could have shouted out, Wesley, because it was Wesley's voice as well as... Geordi's. So my assumption is that she doesn't hear it.
Right. Yeah, she doesn't hear it. So, but we're hearing a little distortion of their voices from our point of view. And that's where we find ourselves on the real ship. And she's gone. Damn, Wesley, I'm sorry. But then all of a sudden, we get the creepy traveler. He shows up and says they're still away. But you have to snuggle with me before I tell you what it is. Oh, that's only in the US version. You guys didn't see that, did you?
Deleted scenes. or is that just in your warp bubble?
And that's in my warp bubble. Yes. Come with me, Wesley. I'll show you how to get her back. But here's the thing. Now, he sent a message to Tau Alpha C, but it, you know, it could take a long way. But that was in her reality. Why? So do we buy that Wesley in the real universe would have thought to seek the Traveler?
I thought it was the other way around. I thought the Traveler seeked him because he said something along the lines that Wesley has this ability and that's how he knew how to find him.
Mm.
So I assume it wasn't just a physical signal that he sent out, that it was actually with his, you know, he sensed there was a problem with Wesley or Wesley was in trouble. So he came looking for him.
That makes him even more creepier then. It's like he's almost watching Wesley somehow. Hmm.
He's either stalking him,
yeah,
or he's got his own duck blind.
Mm. He's probably been in Wesley's room every night since where no one has gone before.
No man has gone before, oh dear.
All right, so. Hey, but we can't argue, man. Later on, he gets it on with Ashley Judd. Dang it. That is some good stuff there. I'm talking about Ashley Judd, you know. So, yeah, the Traveler knows that there was an issue because of Wesley is somehow becoming one with the universe. He says, together they can open a gateway for her, but she must choose to walk through it. And that's why I said earlier, you know, the gateway, the solution they had is the exact same things they've tried before. It's just, it took a while for her to realize what was happening. And that's what, another thing I said earlier, I absolutely love her performance here. When she starts going on the computer and starts piecing this puzzle together bit by bit, you know.
It's almost like Elementary Dear Data all over again.
Mm.
She starts to work out things really well. And I like the idea that she uses the medical diagnostics training that she has to work out what the problem is.
Right. But if she wanted to, if she wanted to get to Tau Alpha C, it would take 123 days. She'd be alone on the flagship of the Federation to get to Tau Alpha C. But she says, engage. I mean, could you go 123 days alone on this ship?
Probably not, but you've got to start sometime. Otherwise, it's going to take a lot longer.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, you know, we've always been told you've got to have a minimal crew to do things. Who's going to fire the photon torpedoes at the Romulans? Who's going to upkeep the dilithium chambers? Who's going to keep all the energy going?
Who's going to clean the toilets?
Right. Well, they don't go to the bathroom. They beam that stuff out.
Yes. But 123 days with, what, two or three holodecks? I think I can manage that.
Holodecks? Replicators? Yeah, I'd have a good old time. As long as the Romulans left me alone during the, you know. But if they were on Voyager, forget it. You're not going 123 hours without getting fired on.
True.
All right. So the Traveler tells Wesley that he's got to close his eyes as he's entering the equations.
It's even more creepy.
Because what was the Traveler doing while Wesley's eyes were closed?
That's horrible.
But Beverly realizes that Doctor has been very silent. Doc, you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh,
I'm
good.
Still here.
So, do you have anything to say on this for now?
No, I'm not the biggest fan of the Traveler coming back, and I think when he does come back, he does turn into, I think I mentioned it before, like he goes from warp field specialist to this like motivational speaker that can help Crusher as long as he rubs his back correctly as he's trying to input the equations. And I didn't really care for that too much. I do think that Paul was right that he turns up after somehow Wesley had you know, thought into the ether that wouldn't it be great to have the Traveler around to help him? But yeah, I mean, it's okay. This thing kind of, I don't particularly like it, but it's relatively inoffensive in the real world space. In the Beverly world space, I think it's, I think she's doing great stuff.
Mm. Okay. Let's see, where else? So Beverly realizes that the whole thing comes down to it's her and the universe she's in, and it's only 705 meters in diameter, or 2,313 feet total for us in the U.S. That is the nature of the universe.
I think it's before that point, she has a wonderful quote, which I'm pretty sure that most children or sport brats everywhere will recognize, which is, if there's nothing wrong with me, then maybe there's something wrong with the universe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's great logic there. And I don't, she seems to get to a point where she says, I'm going to ask you a question that you shouldn't be able to answer. You know, what's the meaning of life, the universe, and everything? Oh, well, it's 700 meters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't quite know how she made that connection. I thought that was a little shaky.
Yeah, what's the nature of the universe? The question was crap. The answer was actually crap, because the universe is a spheroid region 705 meters in diameter. There's nothing about what's in the universe, what it's made up of, just the size of it. So, had she said, how big is the universe? I don't know if the computer could have answered that either. So the nature of the universe is really a dumb question, and the answer was even dumber.
Yeah, but that's just down to bad writing, though.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's when she realizes that she is in a warp field and it's beginning to collapse. My thoughts created this reality. Can they get me out of it again? Well, that answer's not available either. So it's too bad she couldn't start thinking, wait, this universe is starting to get larger. Yes, it is. Yes, people are starting to come back. Or because of the fact that she doesn't really believe that, it wouldn't have happened. Right? Maybe.
Yes.
Maybe.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
But
I don't think she has. I don't think she has like. I don't think she has like explicit control over the universe.
No.
Per se. Not on a conscious or a subconscious level.
It's not her universe, right?
She just lives in it.
Yeah, the Traveler allows her to. Traveler has to get along with his mother-in-law. Or a future mother-in-law, maybe. The jabs just keep on going, don't they? Okay, so anyway. But
by the way, am I the only person that when Crusher is looking at the view of the universe and she realizes that it's going collapsing and half the saucer section's gone, and she then decides not to run screaming from the bridge? I don't know why she hangs around for far too long on the bridge. The bridge would not be there.
No.
Surely.
No, it wouldn't. No, you're right, it wouldn't. But. Okay. But it is
collapsing. And why can't she beam herself down into engineering?
Oh. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, good point.
Well, maybe because the transporter is already gone.
Depends where the transporter is, yes. I'd have to have a look at a cutaway section of the Enterprise to find that one.
Right. So anyway, the Traveler is able to assist Wesley in creating the mathematics that necessary for bringing her back. They bring her back. She jumps in the vortex happily this time. Lands somewhere in engineering, almost knocks Picard over. I don't know, maybe not. And she's back. And the alternate warp bubble reality closed in on itself, and it is now gone. So what would have happened had she not jumped in the vortex? Would it have killed her?
She would have been crushed.
Crushed!
Very good.
Because that's what Voyager thought when they were all stranded in the holodeck. and this thing is slowly coming toward them, that, well, this is it. This is it. We're done.
Oh, in Twisted, right?
Yes, Twisted.
And they you know, have to give up and just let it happen, and then in the end, nothing bad happened.
Nothing happened. All it was is another alien who wanted to download information and get information about them. So, you know, we don't know. Crusher would have just may have found herself right back where she was. Or she would have been dead. Okay. If it was Dr. Pulaski, would you wanted her to escape the bubble?
Not as much.
I don't think I would have liked to have lived in her bubble.
No. I would have voluntarily disappeared. Lou's gone. Yeah, he chose to be gone. Okay. Then, unless you guys have anything else to bring up or something we may have forgot.
The only thing I was going to bring up, which is right at the very beginning of the show, the very, very first scene, where you see Beverly and Dr. Quaice walking towards the camera,
yeah,
and she obviously hugs him and gets very close to him, walks very close to him. It becomes very noticeable that the two uniforms are different colors. One is hers is obviously a blue color, and his is more of a greeny blue color.
Okay. I've always thought this, and I always got confused at why it was. However, I think on the Blu-ray they retouched up the colors because
they did.
It was nowhere near as obvious as I remember as a child thinking, "Why is he in turquoise?"
When I first saw it, I thought, "Oh, she's a doctor. He must be science or something. It's a slightly different blue."
Yeah.
It was only when I read up on it many years later, it's because it's the fact that Beverly Crusher's uniform has been washed more times than his has, and therefore has faded. So the
and
actual...
That's what you have when you have a teenager in your room at night, eh?
This is what happens when you use the same uniform for 4 years and we'll keep washing it every time, and the laundry fades the uniform. And of course, a guest star comes on, he gets a new uniform, and it's proper colour. So her uniform would have been that colour to start off with. Now, yes, James, you are right. In the Blu-ray, they did alter the colours, so it becomes, if not the same, then certainly a lot closer.
This is fascinating because I'm looking at the DVD version, not the Blu-ray. His looks slightly darker, slightly bigger. I mean, obviously, it's a little bigger than hers, but my eyes do not see any color variation besides the fact that his seems darker. So,
I suppose it depends on the contrast on your television as well. But certainly what I was watching it on, it is very. It was always noticeable when I first watched it. I've seen the DVD versions and a converted version from a DVD, and I was watching it today on the, you know, I burned the DVD down to a MP4 file and watched it on my phone, and it's very noticeable on that conversion as well.
And remember that we're in, you know, we obviously get the power transfer as well, so it's a bit of a, we also get a different, we get a different mechanism under which the color is presented, and I'm certain that, you know, it's always been so obvious that maybe it's even a mastering issue as it came across originally as well.
Yeah,
it's so clear in you know, when I saw it on video, when I saw it on DVD, it's so clear that it's a completely different color, to the extent that, you know, the blue and the yellow are different colors.
Fascinating. You're right, because I'm looking at a freeze frame of them very close to each other and very close to the camera, and yeah, his does look a little darker. Like, it's a lot more pressed, it's a lot newer than hers. Huh. Because then, why, you know, he's been on there for years, so why wouldn't he have just as a worn uniform as her?
That's true.
Oh. Okay. Well, anyway.
And the second bit of trivia I was going to bring up was, after doing the stunt where she is hanging off the chair, being sucked into the vortex, that was when she found out that she was pregnant.
Oh, so she was pregnant in this?
So she was obviously only just pregnant, but yes, pregnant all the same.
Oh, Lord.
But she didn't know until after she'd done the stunts.
She wouldn't have been doing that then.
No, they wouldn't have let her.
No. Huh. Okay. Well, I've also noticed while she was doing that, do you ever notice that their pants, their pant legs stay right down crisp and clean on their shoes? I never noticed it before, and I don't even know if I brought this up, but it looks like when Picard crossed his leg, you could see a band going around the bottom of his shoe. Obviously, they did that to keep his pant legs from riding up, but I wonder why they do that.
I've never seen that before. Now you're going to make me look next time I watch Star Trek.
Yeah. Okay. All right, then. I guess that should be it, then. That sounds like it's it. So it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being terrific stuff here. And Colin, it's our guest. Let's have you go first.
It's not Colin.
Okay.
I'm waiting for a new person to turn up now.
Where did I get Colin in my head? You all sound the same. I'm sorry. God. Okay. I'm leaving that in, by the way. Oh, hi, Colin. I was thinking about you just a little bit ago. I don't know why. But, okay, Paul, let's try that one.
Well, okay. Seeing as you kindly use my name. This, as I've already stated, it's a 5 out of 5 for me. It's one of my favorite episodes. I love watching it over and over again, even though you know what's going to happen. It's good to watch it again and see where the clues are and, you know, follow that little thread through. And it's just brilliantly directed by Cliff Bole. James said earlier on about the timing of it, the pacing of it. It is absolutely perfect. The acting is really good. There's three times when the director zooms up on Beverly's face and leaves it there as a sort of lead into the next set of adverts or whatever it would be, or the next break, which I think is a little overdone. And it's not good to see Gates McFadden just staring into nothing for a couple of seconds. Other than that, the rest of her acting is fine. It's a brilliant Gates McFadden episode. She does lead it really well. It doesn't suffer from from having her as the centerpiece of it, unlike other episodes where she has been. This is a great science fiction story. It's got everything you want. Wesley's not a whining little kid. He's doing something quite useful for a change, experiments and things. And the fact that the traveler turns up doesn't bother me at the end. It needed to be ended somehow. They could have done it without him. They could have made it into like Wesley saves by putting this little pathway through to the other universe, and hey presto, she comes out. It's not bad to have an excuse to move the longer lasting plot of Wesley along a little bit more using the traveler. So overall, 5 out of 5. I really like this episode.
Okay. And I was also reading that when Beverly goes into the warp bubble, that she was not wearing her lab coat. And I'm verifying that now with the video, because I never really noticed before. And no, she is not. She is not wearing. But when she comes out of the bubble, she has her lab coat on. And it said, though, that could be...
She comes out with it.
Yeah, she comes out with it, but she's not wearing it going in. And so they said that it could be, contained a physical reality and not simply a manifestation. But no, that has to be just a glitch in the editing, or else they probably should have gone back and redid that. Because, there was no physical reality whatsoever in there. So she couldn't have brought a lab coat back.
Interesting as to whether she would have had any clothes at all then.
Well, whatever came in with her came out with her. So, yeah, I mean, she was the only real thing in that universe.
Yeah, it's just as well, really, because the way that things were getting sucked out of that vortex, like you say, if Wesley had been hit in the head with one of those books that came out of her laboratory, I mean, there's all sorts of scalpels and things lying around in there. They could have come flying out of the vortex.
Yep, there you go. Okay, so anyway, my final thoughts, I don't know, maybe I'll be wrong that Doc actually likes this as much as I do, but I love the episode. It's a real mystery from the first disappearance of the lovable little old doctor to the remaining 1,013 people who disappeared at different variations along the way. It is a very cute story. Bill Irwin, I actually was going to give this a 4 at one point, but Bill Irwin, I love the man. I love his work, so I'm going to give him he's going to give it a 5 for me. It's not completely perfect. It's not completely airtight, but it kept me guessing all the way. I thought along the way people were actually disappearing and that she's finding herself, something is really happening to her, but I never pieced together that was her own reality until the creepy traveler shows up. But I'm not going to let the traveler deduct any points for me. This is still a great, 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 great episode, so I'm happy to give this one another 5 as well. What about you, Doctor?
Okay, I think I'm going to echo a lot of what has already been said and also a lot of the stuff that I said coming to begin with. I think that the episode is very well executed. I do like the mystery. I think it keeps you guessing. I think it's very well directed. I like Gates McFadden and I like Crusher in this episode. I think it's got a lot of good parts. There's a bit where it slightly sags when Worf kind of disappears, and then I don't particularly like the Traveler and the issue about the warp bubble. But it's a mechanism under which they told a relatively decent story. It's also, it's relatively rare, right? We're not looking at any kind of B plot here or anything. It's just a straight up, Crusher basically carries the entire show as a single, she's in every single scene pretty much in the episode, and there's very little for her to, she's not playing off against like a guest star or anything. It's her and her alone. So I really like this episode. I've always had a soft spot for it. I have bad enough memory that I can revisit it every now and again and still be surprised. Mm. And that's always good. It's not quite a 5. I don't do half points. It's coming in as a 4 for me, 4 out of 5. It's still, it's still good. 2 thumbs up. I really enjoy it. But I'm now going to call out Paul for...
Here we go.
Because wasn't this on your shipwreck trek list?
It was going to be. I was going to do a double. I was going to come on my shipwreck and put it on as a shipwreck as well. Purely down to the acting of Gates McFadden in some of the scenes where she just doesn't pull it off quite as good as I would like to see. I mean, for example, when she walks around the corner with Wesley and Wesley disappears, all she does is say, "Wesley, if your son's just disappeared, you would scream it from the top of your voice." It didn't really have that effect.
It depends on the son, right?
Yeah. Well, I suppose, yeah. I mean, if you're going to lose Wesley, I suppose you wouldn't really be too bothered. But there was a little few points that I could have brought up as a shipwreck, but that was the devil inside me.
So in other words, of us three, the only person who really loves Wesley would be the Traveler.
Yes.
Okay. So I was right. I liked it more than Dr. Roberts does.
Yeah. I thought you were. I'm surprised you're coming in so high. But it's good. I mean, it's a good show. It's not like a big tentpole episode. I think it's just a very good episode that's been done very well.
Because it had me fooled.
Yeah, it certainly had me fooled. Well,
that's why I think it's, sometimes in television I can kind of figure it out, because generally they want the audience not to be so, they have to explain it to the audience the whole step of the way. They didn't do that here. They didn't cue us into the obviousness of it until almost, more than halfway through. Well, that's when the Traveler shows up. That's when we know we were all wrong. So there's no exposition. There's no... It was good. It was just a good mystery. And that's why I thought it's very good, and I had to give it the 5. So, okay, Paul, thank you for coming on again.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yes, I don't have you on again at all this year, which really is a drag. But you've got one opportunity and one opportunity only, maybe, if you take it. You got to sign on the dotted line if you want it. But the only episode we have open now is The Loss. So I'm going to ask people if they want it as we go along. That's episode number 10. We'll be recording it June 18th, supposedly, unless something in life happens and we have to change things. But, do you know what The Loss is?
It's the one where Troy loses her powers?
Yes. And off the top of my head. Yes. And I think that's a wonderful, wonderful thing that Troy loses her powers.
Yeah.
Don't like Troy.
Yeah. I'm not saying I'd kick her out of bed that night. I'm just saying Troy is, especially since they brought Guinan on. To me,
yes,
I think they're just fulfilling Deanna's, what's her name? See, not even, Marina. Marina Sirtis's contract, because once they brought Guinan on, there really was no need for Troy anymore. But that's a whole different ballgame. So think about whether you want The Loss, and send me an email if you decide to do.
Okay, I'll look at my calendar and see if I'm free that day. June 18th, you say?
For now. If something happens in the real world here, which I'm hoping is not longer than it needs to be, then it could change.
Are you
change.
Sure that real world of yours isn't a warp bubble?
I wish. Okay, I'll only say this part. Okay. We were not recording earlier when I mentioned this. I lost my job. It was a freak act, a fluke of things that I made a mistake putting a wrong date in an entry. I put a date down that I wasn't even working because it was off by one number. Nobody has ever put the wrong date in something. I would put down something that I was about to do. Something came up. I forgot to take it out. Makes it look like I had falsified records. Not intentionally, but I may have. And for that, I was let go. And I'm currently looking, and something could happen. And our schedule on recording the show is a lot based on when I'm available and when James is available. So if it changes, something could happen. I wish I was in a warp bubble, because I'll tell you something. This is creepy. I've had nightmares about losing that job. I've had nightmares of going on to another job and how I always regretted it. And for the last 4 days, once in a while, I do a violent shake, because that's usually how I get myself out of those dreams. When something's really strange or happening in those dreams or in those nightmares, I shake myself awake. And I have been shaking so much, I've been rubbing my chest, burn my finger into my chest, trying to think maybe pain will wake me up. I just hit my wrist on my printer. I don't know if you heard that noise, but obviously I felt pain. You don't feel pain in your dreams, and that's why I know this nightmare is a reality. And it's driving me absolutely freaking crazy, because I can't get myself out of this nightmare, and so. We'll see what happens. The show will go on. It's a matter of degree of when we can record. And I hope I don't end up inconveniencing 21 different people here and 21 different shows by changing all the dates. But we'll see what happens. So, Paul, again, thank you for coming on. I'm sorry to unload on you guys, but talking to these two, I feel so much better. But
yeah. It's amazing how many times you hear people say that when they're going through a bad time in real life. They come on a podcast, and just for a couple of hours, you suddenly, the weight of the world lifts off your shoulders. And it's very therapeutic, podcasting, I find.
It is. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I've had a few people say things like that.
Yeah. I haven't laughed in the last 4 days. And like I say, I'm not joking. I literally violently shake, because I'm hoping it would snap me out of this nightmare, and it doesn't. So, but
Just keep your eyes peeled for a vortex, just in case.
Oh, I'm looking, bud.
And jump through it.
I will jump through it. Once I see that vortex, you better believe I'm going to jump through it. But, you know, I've got some feelers out. There's one job in particular that, you know, it's a location my sister works at as a nurse. They're looking for security staff. The security director's heard the story. He thinks I should sue, but unfortunately, we are in a at-will employment state. It's at my will, and it's at their will, and our wills didn't seem to match it anymore. So unless they didn't fire me because I'm black, they didn't fire me because I'm gay, they didn't fire me because I'm old. And unfortunately, I'm only one of those three, and I can't prove that that would have been it. So I'll let you guys determine which those are.
I didn't realize you were black, Blue.
Exactly. Yes, yes. So anyway, you sexy beast, I'm going to get going.
Okay, but we do have to end, by the way, by mentioning that...
Next time on Star Trek, The Next Generation. A shocking discovery on a forgotten planet. A mysterious link to the past captivates the crew.
I'm Tasha's sister.
Is she a comrade in distress?
It's not how I intend to die.
Or a murderess in disguise?
Her loyalties are clearly divided, Captain.
Find out who the real Shara Yar is on Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Please join us again next week as we have Sean Vanderdoo on, and we are going to be reviewing episode 6 of season 4, which is Legacy.
And her perkiness is why I'm not gay. Cool, oh God, she's so hot.
Legacy sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah, the episode sucks, but the way they dressed Ashara, she was way too perky. But I can't.
You've got to like those jumpsuits.
Oh my goodness, she was the way they dressed her up was just nasty hot. That's a different story.
I wonder why Sean wanted to go onto that episode.
I don't know. Maybe because people were snagging up episodes right and left. Anyway, it's a good thing. I love the fact that, you know, we are fully booked except for the loss. That is the only one the entire season that didn't get someone. So,
well, when you guys open up season 5, there's a couple on there that I'd be interested in. So
I'll keep that in mind. So everyone,
there's at least 3, but I have a feeling I know somebody who would take one of them.
I'll bet. Okay, everyone, we'll do that later. So everyone, take care. And good night.
Good night.
Good night.
All right.